Hi, everybody. Welcome, and thank you for tuning in. This is Henrik, and we are glad to be able to speak to you once again. RedIceCreations.com, that's the website. You can catch our radio programs three times per week, and that includes Radio 314 as well. We also post, compile, and write on stories from around the world and locally here on all the madness and many other things that are important and interesting of all the things going on. So check that out and subscribe to the feed. Today we have Ben Davidson with us from Suspicious Observers, and we're going to talk about the weather. I mean, what is going on with the weather? Hey Ben, hope you're doing well today. Thanks for coming on with us on Red Ice Radio. Good to talk to you and meet you finally.
Absolutely. It's been a long time coming, my friend.
You bet. Now, you have a lot of interesting videos on your YouTube channel and your website as well, your accompanying website. I think a lot of our audience already will be familiar somewhat with your work or not, but tell us a little bit about your background, how you kind of got into making the videos that you do about, you know, the weather, climate change, space weather, and all the related topics that you do. How do you get on this track?
Well, it was kind of a strange convergence of everything in my life at one time. I was finishing law school, and I had already decided I was never going to be a lawyer. But being trained as a lawyer is a good is pretty good if you're going into due diligence and other types of research like that. Law school really teaches you how to do research and how to check yourself and how to be skeptical of yourself and just make sure that you're not missing anything and you're thorough. And so I was in the process of being trained like that and beginning to practice that. And at the same time, I was honestly getting into some of those shows on the, you know, on the History Channel and on the Science Channel, like The Universe or, you know, some of those ones about ancient cultures and what they have to say. I find a lot of it to be somewhat far-fetched, but a lot of it is, it just hits me as true. And when you do a little bit of diligence on it yourself, you find it to be true. And so this is all in early 2011. And I pretty much started my diligence position, and I didn't mind it. I was certainly looking for something better. I had found that I had actually been pretty good at debunking things online. Now, when I say that, I mean, you know, when I talk about an old person who gets conned by something a little more elaborate than the Nigerian prince who sends you an email asking for just, you know, a few $100s. You know, everybody right. knows that thing. But, you know, these things are getting more elaborate, and people get conned out of a lot of money out of their retirement funds sometimes, and they're unable to live. And so it started off with just debunking things like that. And then somebody who I help asked me to look into global warming. And the way they posed the question was quite interesting, because they posed the question like, can you tell me if, you know, if man is really warming the planet or if nothing's happening? And I had to come back and say it's option C. The climate is changing quite significantly. It's real. It's going to get significantly worse. And humans play a small role in it. Very small. And so that kind of started my interest in the weather aspect of it. And then we had the earthquake in Japan, which was a little later in 2011. And I was just taken by the event completely. I could not stop watching videos online. And I think you can pretty much start to connect the dots. You start watching videos about the Japan tsunami and the earthquake, and eventually you're going to run across something like Comet Elenin and then Alignment and the Anunnaki are coming back. And, you know, that was very, very prevalent back in 2011. And, you know, I kind of embraced this stuff. I thought that this was phenomenally entertaining, at least. And so, you know, I was like, hey, this is kind of cool. I could make some videos about this stuff. I know how to go and pull information and put it together. And so, you know, if you go back and you look at some of my very early videos, I was doing things like making music videos about Nibiru or about Elenin or about the planets or the sun or things like that.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it evolved into using the diligence skills for what they really are and trying to figure out what was going on. And I've never looked back since then. Sorry, that was a 9-minute explanation.
Well, it's a good one. It gives us audience a little bit of the background story, kind of where you're coming from and whatnot. And obviously, then some of the topics you've covered have kind of there are a few that you've kind of narrowed in on a little bit more or less. There's a couple that we want to talk about more today. But I think one of the more interesting ones that we're into right now is the sun and the climate. And on your website, you have a section on Agenda 21. You tie it into this way, which is extremely important, of course, because it is about the reformation, nonetheless, of human civilization, at least in the Western world. So why don't we kind of go into that a little bit and see what you've found and what you've discovered when it comes to what we actually are facing when it comes to climate change, the extreme, on both ends, actually, weather patterns that we've seen, and what the role of the sun is in all this, Ben.
Absolutely. Well, I saw it as nothing short of a small miracle when the IPCC had to finally come out and admit that there had been no global warming since the early 90s. This is, even a step further than I had even been willing to conclude. I mean, I don't have the volumes of data or a supercomputer, but it was pretty apparent that global warming should be called climate change, if not climate extremes. There are periods of very normal weather. The last two summers in the United States, when tornado activity is normally high, it's been very, very low tornadic activity. Now, when we do get an outburst, it's near record-breaking every time there is an outburst, but those are few and far between. And so you have this real swing from calm to extreme. There were no major hurricanes that hit the east coast of the United States. They would come off of Africa or form in the Caribbean and just shoot north or dive down across Mexico, almost like there was this invisible shield that you couldn't see. However, you look over to the other side of the planet and they just get hit one after another. And this will probably go back and forth over the years. It's not like 1 week it's extreme for one place, 1 week it is for another. Although it is like that when it comes to temperature. I know I don't have to tell you how cold it's getting, given where you're calling from. But we've seen more records broken for heat and for cold temperatures than we've seen in a very, very long time. And what's very impressive is that the precipitation records are dwarfing both of them. And this has been going on for a few years now. Now the experts have officially come out and admitted that we're not really warming right now. Now they add the caveat that we are in this longer-term Pacific cooling cycle. But given what we know in totality, that Pacific cooling cycle adds a very interesting element to what we see happening off-planet that could be potentially affecting our weather. And I'll start with the punchline and then go into how it could happen. But essentially, if we're going to see an extreme shift in temperature in the next few decades, not 100 years, but few decades, it could be cold. It would be cold. And here's why. There is a very serious change happening in the entire solar system. Most of the planets that are surrounding Earth are changing far more than Earth is. Venus's rotation speed, the length of its day, is actually changing. We've measured that. And its wind speed is 25% higher in the strongest storms than it was the last time we checked, about a decade ago. We haven't seen anything like that yet on Earth. Yeah, for a couple of decades, our planet has been warming. But you should see Mars. The evidence we have of warming on the red planet is phenomenal in terms of retreat of its polar caps. I mean, they like to talk about the loss of, the loss of the ice at the poles here on Earth. And you know, the North does have its struggles in summertime, but didn't those climate scientists just get stuck in the ice down in Antarctica along with, you know, the first three ships that they tried to go, rescue them? Yeah, I wonder, and that is a complete global warming crew as well. If you go and you check out the guy who was leading that group of scientists, they kept calling them tourists on the news, but it was definitely a group of scientists, and the leader is, full on the charge with global warming.
Yep.
Anthropogenic. But anyway, moving on, Jupiter. Jupiter got another superstorm. It's called Red Junior. This is very, very significant. Now, it has storms that pop up and go away, but one the size of Red Junior is not something that you see every decade, per se. In addition, it lost an entire stripe on the southern hemisphere that is back building now, or at least it looks like it's trying to. But these are phenomenal, systemic planetary changes. And again, we haven't seen anything like that on Earth. We've noticed that the last time we checked Saturn's rotation speed, the length of its day, it had changed from before. In addition, Saturn has a 30-year superstorm. It's pretty regular. Ever since we've had telescopes that have been able to see it, we've noticed every 30 years this comes and goes. But this last one was 10 years early and lasted something like three times as long as they're supposed to last. Could you imagine if there was a hurricane, essentially half the size of the United States, that just sat over an area for 2 months? That's the kind of thing we're talking about.
Right.
We haven't seen anything like that on Earth.
Yeah.
And so one looks around and one realizes that all these planets are changing. And then you come to the sun. And one of the things that I report on most of my channel is how the sun appears to be weakening. This solar maximum is not much of a solar maximum in terms of sunspots or in terms of solar flaring. Even the few sunspots we do get, the ones that even appear to complex, don't live up to their flare potential based on how complex they are. When we do get a flare, they don't produce CMEs or coronal mass ejections like we're used to seeing. When the coronal mass ejection is produced, it's very, very weak. We saw in an American Geophysical Union talk on the weakening sun that the heliospheric pressure, because of all of this, is 40% weaker. This is what we see in the very, very low solar wind speed, which we've noticed every few weeks. Now, what that means, the heliospheric pressure, that relates directly to the heliosphere, our protective shield against the galaxy. Cosmic rays,
yep.
Things like that. And we already had a pretty good idea of how this weakening sun could potentially affect the weather. There's an Irish solar scientist, and this actually came out in the Irish Times, despite the fact that it was that it came out of a NASA conference in Colorado. Didn't make a single news outlet in the States. The polar vortex, which has been making news a lot recently, and some of its lower atmospheric processes that are tied to it, are strongly themselves dependent on solar flaring for their strength and keeping where they're supposed to be. And when we don't get this flaring, it can dip down and allow the polar air to shoot, to much lower latitudes than it's supposed to.
Yeah.
The terrible winter that Europe had, was that the 2010-2011 winter, that was pretty much record-breaking in terms of deaths.
I think we had, maybe there was more deaths actually, but I remember up in Sweden, the 2009 one was really severe. We hadn't had one like that in like 10 years or something before that, yeah.
Yeah, well, I was actually surprised when you guys didn't get it as bad. That was last winter or two winters ago.
Yeah.
You guys got one off, and the United States got one off in two winters ago as well. Didn't have much, at least in the Midwest, in the East. But we recently saw this paper that talked about the grand minimums of the sun. And this was something that we had guessed at potentially, that, hey, look, this is how it happened last time. The sun could go into another grand minimum. The last one we had was called the Maunder minimum. And that correlates to the last mini ice age that we did have. There was reports of agricultural distress, famine, starvation, even cannibalism on just about every habitable continent. And this is just 400 years ago. We're not talking a very long time. And so in addition to watching the sun, and of course with last year being 2012 and the Mayan Bakhtun being 394 point something years, if I'm not too far off there, I was thinking, hey, that's about the last time we had a Maunder minimum. But this new paper came out and just stomped all doubt. They essentially proved that these cycles happen every about 407 years. And there's not much variation. Like, there can be a few decades variation here or there, but every 400 years, this is coming. And the last one was 400 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, you might say, well, hey, you said there's a couple of decades. This might not happen for a while. Okay, you might have 10 years, 20 years. But looking at how the sun is acting right now and what it's doing, and not just the flaring, not just the sunspots or lack thereof, but how the polarity of the sun, the magnetic force, has been weakening steadily now for four decades. And if you were to plot them all on a curve, you know, they tend to go up off the baseline and back down, and up off the baseline and back down. This solar cycle, we're just not getting off the baseline. I look back 11 years and we're just sitting there riding on the ground, just above zero.
Yeah.
And so you have the lack of flaring with the potential to cause very, very serious winters. You have a significant decrease in the energy that we're getting from the sun, and it looks like we're about to have a significant drop in energy that we're getting from the sun. We're actually starting now. This is going to last for decades. But now you throw in this Pacific cooling cycle, and you really have to say, how bad is this mini little event going to be? It'd be nice if global warming was real and it could just kind of counteract this, and we could talk
about, you know what, that's what I said, and with everything, if like if there was actually counteraction with carbon dioxide, which we can talk about again to that as well, but that would be the best thing that could happen then, to actually balance these extremes, right?
Yeah, I wish we were powerful enough. It's
yeah, exactly.
I've often, you know, had no choice but to think to myself that it is a bit vain to think that we actually have the power that we're purported to have at some times.
Yep.
But anyway, so you look to the what's going to happen here. Okay, so you're used to cold. Canada's used to cold. Do you, you know, make sure you have an extra jacket? Do you splurge on the better socks or boots this winter? Well, that's not the kind of worry that I'm worried about. You guys are, especially you guys up north who will get it the worst, are tough. You guys are used to it and you can handle it. However, what happens when that storm that caused 140 mile per hour wind gusts in Scotland and a 60-foot surge, raise in the water height in England? What happens when that's 200 miles an hour and it's 100 feet?
Yeah.
What happens when there's a 60-foot storm surge in Florida? You know what happens if there's a 60-foot storm surge in Florida? That goes a quarter of the way across the state.
Right.
That is a flat place. The storms are going to get more severe. The cold is going to affect agriculture on a global scale. Places that are perfect for growing might not be so perfect for growing anymore. The potential for cold to last into June, which is preposterous for the growing season in the breadbasket, the center of the United States. The potential for there to be like a snowfall that goes down to Texas in June is going to become a reality. What do you do when you grow a third or a quarter of the crops that you're supposed to be growing to feed the world? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. This is the last thing I want to say. And we're far more vulnerable to this than they were 400 years ago, 800 years ago, 1200 years ago. Every single time this happens, there are significant famines. And it's the kind of thing that it helps to prepare for.
Well, exactly. And you rightly say, I mean, we are used to the conveniences today, and especially up in the north as well, with our electricity, with the way we heat our homes and everything. And I mean, if we go back a couple of hundred years, those people were way more tough than what people are today. And actually, I wonder how long that would last if something more permanent like this actually set in. And especially if we look at the combination of something like the Carrington event or something similar, where we actually
You don't have to look that far back. If I'm not mistaken, in 2003, was there not a solar-induced transformer event not too far away from Northern Europe?
Yeah, it was actually in Malmö. I went back and looked at that record as well. I actually don't remember it when it occurred, but I went back later and checked it out. And yeah, it was a something in combination with the with the just surge in the area. And this is something I wanted to ask you about as well. Like, what? It seems to be a very small centralized area. Like, of all of the entire planet, it seemed to have honed in on this, one small area in Sweden. What makes that, and what directs it in such a way, instead of having like a massive, fallout over a larger area?
Well, when it comes to something like the Carrington event, if the sun really decides to give it the old college try, everything's going to go. Everything's going to fry. But the actual surges, the ground currents, those start at the places of least resistance and move to the places of more resistance based on how much energy is delivered into the system. Now, did you know that just one nation over, this is probably the best place in the world for measuring ground currents. I don't know if you've ever looked at a global geology plot of the magnetism of the underground rock and metal, but there's a very, very interesting complexion up in Northern Europe. And I remember looking at that and thinking, oh, this looks very similar to what it looks like in Quebec. And, for that reason, I would have to think that, there's probably areas in Russia where this applies as well, although I don't think there's anybody living up there. But there's probably certain areas where if it's going to be a less than all event, something between nothing and the kill shot, there are only so many areas where it's going to hit first. Like, for example, if places in Jamaica and Africa and Northern Australia are losing their power because of a solar event, you guys will too.
Yeah.
So, and so will I, for that matter.
Right.
And, pretty much right here in the middle of the United States.
Well, that's really interesting. And, of course, it gives us a different story of what we've been told in the last, 10 years when it comes to global warming and rise in temperatures. But how do you think that this would impact and change, people and people's lives in that regard? And how long, far south would this push? I mean, we would see potentially migrations and everything else as a consequence of this. Where would the zone be, do you think, that where it would be fairly okay to grow food?
It's a really tough call, because in the summertime, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to play, golf in short sleeves still up in the north in Alaska if you wanted.
Right.
The idea of this and what happened during the last mini ice age, it was not like they just never had any summers. It was that the winters lasted longer. Some of the storms were worse. You know, there's a reason why, you know, these people thought some crazy things when they would go through, you know, they had just gone through decades of quiet, kind of like we are. We've gone through decades, centuries even, of pretty quiet weather. It's why we have this normalcy bias, like nothing's going to change. Nothing could ever change. Come on, I've been there. I've seen that. I've heard that doomsday theory before.
Yeah, I'm just going back to one of the Norse mythology. Some people might know about that, but Fimbulvinter is basically the term that they use where you had, I think they described as three successive winters where the snow comes in all directions without any intervening summer. So this seems to be an event back in 535 to 536 that actually, you know, ties into that. So that might be the last time we saw it up there, you know?
Well, yeah, that's pretty on point, actually, given that these things last, you know, they last a few decades, so you don't just go, you know, 400 years, 800 years. It's 400 years plus a few decades, then 400 years plus a few decades. So that may actually work out to be perfect. We don't know. That's very interesting, though. I did not know that. I'm glad I, it's very interesting.
And then you have, you know, consequent, you know, epochs of exiting, you know, those lands at that time. You have, you know, Vandals going further south and Goths and everything else. And it's just a whole onset of migration occurring around that as well. But what if we try to discuss a little bit more about what actually is going on with the sun and what's the driving force behind that? What are these changes on the sun that just periodically occur like this? And why do they happen? What do we know? What do you know about that?
Well, it's pretty clear that there are a lot of cycles on the sun. Some of the ones that people are familiar with are the 11-year sunspot cycle, where the sun flips its polarity at the end of every cycle. Others know about the hypothesized 26,000-year cycle, where the sun goes, you know, from extreme maximum to extreme minimum to extreme maximum. A lot of people believe this is tied to a binary. But the idea that there's this 400-year cycle, or approximately 400-year cycle, is very new. The paper came out pretty much at the end of 2013. And we know that there's nothing on the galactic level that we really kind of interact with every 400 years like that. At least nothing that we can see and detect. There are internal processes in the sun that we just don't understand. You know, there are internal processes involved in the cycles of volcanic eruptions. You know, we know about how often things erupt. And here on Earth, we can get a pretty good idea of why those things happen, although we don't really have all the answers of what happens beneath our feet. And we have even less about what's happening underneath what you can see on the sun.
Right.
But they're definitely, I mean, if I had to take a guess, I would say it's something internal. There's some kind of internal cycle that the sun is on.
And this is no bigger cycle, innate cycle, which is going to give us more severity or anything like that. So it seems to be pretty periodical, right?
It very well may be, especially because this was the, you know, just say for the sake of argument that the Mayans 394 years, whether that's exactly what their Bakhtun was or whether we lost a couple of days or years in translation, you know, that's a pretty good argument when you talk about this 400-year solar cycle. And, you know, if this end of their calendar meant anything, I mean, it wouldn't be, and I pretty much spent all of 2012 saying this, that you're not going to see some momentary, instantaneous-ish hits-the-fan kind of situation.
Yeah, exactly.
It would be a a tipping point, to be honest. After which things became rough for a while. And, you know, there could be other cycles here at work that we don't understand. I know that, you know, one cycle we're hitting on a much shorter time frame is that Pacific cooling cycle. A couple of things to consider along your lines of thinking. And, you know, unfortunately, the most honest answer I can give you, and I believe the best one, is I don't know for sure.
Sure. Yeah.
But I can tell you what wasn't happening 400 years ago. The magnetic poles weren't flipping. Back then, they had been stable and stagnant and were moving, they were traipsing around a couple of miles per year like they're supposed to do. But this magnetic pole shift, and is your audience familiar with the magnetic pole shift occurring?
We have talked about it in the past, but if you want to, you know, kind of summarize that for us a little bit, that would be great.
Sure, sure. Basically, we have data on where the magnetic north and south are. They're not on the geographic north and south poles, although they are quite close to them. And they're supposed to move around a little bit. And every couple hundred thousand years, they say, these poles flip completely and our north becomes our south becomes our north. And in the meantime, there's kind of this magnetic havoc on Earth. Now, we are technically overdue for that now, by a little ways, but scientists will assure you that there is no evidence to suggest it's happening now. One could argue, however, that the exact opposite is true. NASA themselves have been plotting this North Pole shift, and they thought it significant enough to plot them on a map for you and draw a whole article out about it. Essentially, the pole is supposed to move a couple of miles every year. Then it started speeding up. Started going 10 miles, 30 miles. And now it appears that the pole is traversing at twice the distance over half the time, or four times faster year per year. And it goes back and forth, but that's essentially the long-term trend.
Right.
Such that it will be in Siberia before long. And if it doesn't jerk the wheel to the right at some point as it is going westward across the Arctic Ocean. If it does not jerk the wheel to the right at some point, it's going to have the opportunity to flip completely. In just a few years, it could be going so fast that the flip would take only a matter of weeks. So that was certainly not happening 400 years ago. That's when it began.
Right. So that comes in conjunction with all these other things that we talked about. Now, what would that mean for people who don't know that, consequential with our electrical grid and all those things, if we had a magnetic flip on the Earth? What would happen then?
Well, when this happens, first of all, the magnetic field doesn't go to zero. We don't lose all protection from solar radiation. We do get a lot less. Don't get me wrong, but we don't lose our magnetosphere. However, we will become significantly more vulnerable to coronal mass ejections and the electrical disruptions induced by them. And one would have to imagine that, first of all, our atmospheric processes are quite delicate. They really are. And small changes have significant effects. Whether that be just at the very upper layers or, the amount of water vapor in a given area, doesn't matter what it is, but I couldn't even really begin to imagine the kind of weather effects that would have.
Yeah.
And, along those same lines, something that wasn't happening 400 years ago, the magnetosphere was strong, very strong, 400 years ago. The WGC for Geomagnetism in Kyoto, Japan has a brilliant illustration on their website that literally you can show it to anyone and they'll get it just like that. they have a color-coded overlay of Earth that shows the magnetic strength, the strength of our shield against energy from space and deadly radiation. And they basically showed it kind of pulsing back and forth, but when it pulses down, it doesn't come back up to the same strength. And then it pulses down a little lower and doesn't come quite back up to the same strength. And for 400 years, since the last Maunder Minimum, since the magnetic poles were calm, the overall strength of our magnetic shield, our protector, has been weakening as well. Now, I had actually spent the majority of the last 3 years thinking that it was 10% weaker. The ESA recently came out and pretty much said that it was 15% weaker than it was just about 150 years ago. We don't know how much weaker it is from 400 years ago. But that is speeding up as well, meaning that the most significant time of us losing our shield from energy from space is the time of global warming. It's very interesting.
Yes, it is. And what I find interesting about this as well, then, is if we have the heliosphere from the sun, you know, kind of weakening as well because of less activity, less sunspots and all those things. And if we're in the period of a Maunder Minimum, where our own magnetic shield is weakening, that basically would let all that cosmic radiation straight in. And I mean, if we look at from NASA's website under there, you know, what would happen if the magnetic field of the Earth suddenly changed? They described how it happens. They suspect every 25,000 years or so, and that they say like this: this would let cosmic rays freely penetrate to the Earth's surface and cause mutations. This seems not to have been had much effect in the past, so we probably don't really know what is going on during these field reversals. There have been a dozen of them over the last few million years, documented in rocks, which has emerged and solidified along the mid-Atlantic ridge, where continental plates are slowly separating. These epochs form parallel bands along the ridge where the rock has stored a fossilized image of the local orientation of the Earth's magnetic field for the last few million years. But what I'm focusing in on that, of course, is that they speculate it might cause mutations, Ben.
Yeah.
And that's pretty interesting.
Well, absolutely. And if you're already sitting down after you've read that, Googling cosmic rays and global cooling, or Googling cosmic rays and, ice age, will keep you busy for hours. You know, just doing simple internet searches. There's a lot of controversy with that, as there is with all things like this, but the combination of, or the correlation between cosmic rays, what we're facing pretty much, and global cooling is, there's a lot of papers out there about it. I wouldn't go as far as to say it's well accepted, but among those in the business, it's well known for sure.
And I guess I would refer people specifically to the book The Chilling Stars, A Cosmic View of Climate Change, written by Danish author Henrik Svensmark. He's has a really interesting theory. We tried to get him on for a while, but we haven't succeeded in that yet. But that really speaks to what you just said there, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you think that would mean, though? I mean, if we look at the bigger picture there, if we just kind of speculate a little bit, do you think that we're talking about these natural cycles that coincide in conjunction like this, when there is a opportunity perhaps, or some people will view it as a potential species die-off and a kind of a reboot, if you will, of the natural systems? Because anything is possible in that scenario, right?
Absolutely. The idea that life will not continue on Earth is probably not the smart bet, as we've never seen that be the case so far. But the idea that something on the order of people's worst nightmares, or something close to that, as they could be formulated around a natural disaster, That would be on the worse end of the possibilities, yes. You know, for all I know, the magnetic North Pole just stopped in its tracks and started heading back the other way. And the shield, our magnetic shield, kicked back in. And for all I know, a couple scientists made a mistake about a 400-year cycle, and the sun's going to kick back up tomorrow. For all I know, those things could be true.
Right.
But I am essentially trained as a research professional, and everything that I'm looking at says that that's not the case, says that global famines, extended periods without electricity, not even from the sun, but just because of how bad storms are, extended periods without electricity during extreme heat or extreme cold are possible for every single person on every single latitude of the planet during some month of the year. You know, here in Columbus, Ohio, I will probably never freeze to death or burn to death. But I don't know how many more of these midsummer superstorms I can handle coming right down the Ohio Valley and taking out power to, you know, 200,000 people for a week at a time.
Right.
What if, I mean, when it takes power out to a million people for a month, people are going to die. Not just because of the storm, the number of people who die after the storm,
yeah,
will be greater.
Now, is there any other possibility of this these trends that we've been talking about having being reversed, unknown variables kind of changing this this conclusion?
Oh, absolutely. The idea of certainty is somewhat preposterous. I think it's as silly as the notion that we are actually, you know, changing the world in such a profound way. Oh, and we're somehow managing to change the world so much that the other planets in the sun are changing as well, all at the same time.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, it's very possible that, you know, we could get warmer. You know, if you look at the long-term plots, you know, our best guesses about what the temperature was millions of years ago, we're not at the periodic highs. And by the way, that does also go up and down on a sinusoidal curve. And we're not up where the historic peaks of the temperature are. We haven't hit there yet. On the other hand, if you look over the last couple hundred thousand years, we tend to be going up and down and up and down into these little mini ice ages, or what's a little bit more than a mini ice age. And we've currently been warmer for longer than any other time in the past half a million years. And we're way overdue to go cold. So right. Depending on your point of view and what paper or chart or graph or website you're looking at that moment, it can very easily skew one's perception. I mean, this is why I'm kind of latching on to the term climate extremes and just holding on for dear life, because I can't think of a better way to describe both what's going to happen with the weather and my absolute lack of a clue as to what that final outcome is going to be.
Interesting. Well, I want to ask you more about here. That in the second here, I want to squeeze in, you know, one more question here before we kind of take a little break and talk about your websites and what you have upcoming and such. But what I want to ask you about is basically, there seems to have been so far then more dramatic changes on the other planets in our solar system than it has been on the Earth at this moment anyway. Is there a lag time? Is there a delay because our planet is different in some way? Or how do we explain that?
Well, I've got an answer, but a lot of people won't like it. You know, there is something different about our planet. We have life here, and the life here, a certain segment of it has evolved to a degree which many of the members of that segment consider to be very, very intelligent. Sometimes I question that conclusion. But there is volumes of evidence that we can have effects on the weather. We cannot create a hurricane or a tornado out of nothing. We cannot break the polar vortex or, you know, do anything like that. We can cloud seed. We can do our best to try to steer a storm. We can weaken it. We could probably strengthen it a little bit if we wanted to. Basically, the most wow things you see about weather modification in terms of what they're claimed to do are complete nonsense. But that really belies the seriousness of the issue. They can do it. There's evidence that they are doing it. It amounts to nothing short of trying to play God. And, you know, people can say what they want about, you know, the evil people in control. And there's a lot of greedy and corrupt people in control. But you can also not argue that at this moment, we are at the peak of medicine, technology, and social equality in terms of the global population. And yeah, there's still so many people for whom that is not a reality. But think about what that was like 400 years ago. Think about where we are now. I would rather be living at what's called the poverty line in the United States today than be, you know, royalty 1,000 years ago. There's just no comparison in the quality of life, the length of life, what you have to deal with. And I know this much. We are much more valuable alive than dead. The masses, I mean. And despite a very, very real and existing depopulous mentality among certain what you would call elites, there's definitely another side, at least two sides battling, probably more. And one of them seems to want to, you know, get rid of a lot of humans. You know, Bill Gates has talked about using vaccines to reduce the rate of population growth.
Yep.
But then there's also people who will be richer and more powerful if there's 10 times as many people turning on a light switch, getting behind the wheel of a car, needing something plastic or something metal for something. And this dichotomy is missed by most of the people in our community when they're talking about this global control. I'm not saying one's good and one's bad. I don't really like either one of them. There's something we can talk about on the website here in a moment. It's actually a good lead into that because I do talk about that on the website. But I do honestly think that they've come to the conclusion that this shift is going to be major and they need to try to stop it. They think they can. They're arrogant enough to try. I think that they've been doing it. And so we are seeing a delay because of something different on this planet. But that's just a crazy idea I have. You want to take a break?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that. I mean, I agree with you, though. It's certainly not a done deal. I think there are a lot of battling interest groups and, you know, powerful people who want to keep things in their way and whatnot. And we'll see if we get into that later as well, Ben, to talk more about that. But tell us about your website, your YouTube channel. I know that you'll be speaking at the Electric Universe 2014 conference in Albuquerque coming up in March here. So tons of stuff going on. But give us all the details so people know where to find you.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the YouTube channel is Suspicious Observers. It's all one word, no space. And the O in observers is actually a zero. If you Google Suspicious Observers with a space or with an O, it'll find me, trust me. I do a show every morning. It's a global update on significant climate news, space news, solar news, earthquake news, basically the stuff that people like me wishes was on the television news all the time. It comes out around 6:30 a.m. Eastern time in the United States, between 6 and 7 a.m. And then there is our website, suspiciousobservers.org. And that again, Suspicious Observers is one word and the O is a zero. And there we have compilations of some of our special videos, so you don't have to go hunting for them. There's a lot of stuff we talk about, and there's hundreds of new people joining every day, and they need to get caught up quick. Well, we have a section of background videos. There's just a couple on there, and that's all you need to really just get into the swing of things and really know your stuff and be able to understand what's going on when we do the news. I also offer memberships for some stuff that we work a little extra hard to prepare. Everything that people do receive as a result of the memberships is going to be made public 1 year after release to the members, so that it's just kind of like a sneak preview kind of situation. And that goes for the special videos. There's also a daily evening news I do, which is in the evening time in the United States. There will be no point in making those public, but for those who want to keep up to date and know what's going on, and for people who live in other parts of the world, that's a more convenient time to watch. Every Saturday, I try to be like you and host an audio only session with some of my friends on Skype, and we do that every Saturday, and we post that for the members. It's a really good community for getting into this stuff. People are friendly. They're willing to help. And some really smart, knowledgeable people. And it's very, very easy to get caught up at the website and at the YouTube channel.
All right. Very good. We'll have the links up to the website, to the YouTube channel, Suspicious Observers, and also... Yeah, check out thunderbolts.info. I want to plug that for David Talbot and all the good guys over there.
Oh, absolutely.
And you'll be there as well, Ben.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. That's the Electric Universe Conference. That's coming up late March 2014 in Albuquerque, New Mexico. There's going to be a different air to this event than there have been in past events. And I know that you've spoken recently with Dave, and boys, he's an interesting character, isn't he? You could talk to him for hours.
Yeah,
and,
he's great. He's great.
Yeah, I've lost some afternoons that way. but yeah, this is going to be spectacular. In addition to guys like Dave and Walt Thornhill and myself, we have a couple of ex-NASA guys who are going to be there. We have some professors who are leaders in their fields who are going to be there. And it was not long ago when this was rightly considered something that was on the fringe. Not saying anything about the merits of its work, but it was very much on the fringe and nobody really knew about it. And NASA's paying attention, apparently. And so are professors and the people who we have screamed for so long, why aren't you listening? Why aren't you seeing this? Are finding themselves less and less bound by their prejudices against them. It's going to be a wonderful thing to see.
Absolutely. Very good. All right, Ben, we'll take a break here. We'll continue in the second hour with much more to talk about. So stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back.